Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So if you're a Nats fan and you were going to the park last night, you knew what you signed up for, right? You knew what you signed up for because you know the Nats deal this time of year. You know the Nats deal in elimination games. If something bad can happen, it will, because it always has. You just didn't think that it would happen as quickly as it did last night. Not with Max Scherzer on the mound, but he walked the first batter he faced, and then up came Yasmani Grandal.
Scherzer is ready, and for Grandal, here it is, and Yasmani drives one to right in the corner, and it's going to get off the wall out there, and on to third goes Grisham. Did this one go out? It did. Grandal just hit one out of here. It cleared the barrier in right.
Brewers Radio, off the wall or over the wall. Either way, second batter of the game, seventh pitch of the game. Nats fans already losing their minds, already despondent. Those are the Nats that they know and the Brewers that they feared. Even without Christian Yelich, these guys just keep battling. And then it got worse in the second when Eric Thames dug in.
Here he comes again, and that one's lined into right center, deep, get up, get up! It is gone for Eric Thames! And the Brewers lead 3-0. Eric Thames just took Scherzer out of here in right center.
3-0 Brewers, and they did it to Scherzer, and you can feel the air leaving the building, and the Natitude flooding in. Nats fans have seen this movie before. They knew what was going to happen. They cannot win elimination games. If it's a winner-take-all game, the Nats are going to take nothing and then go home. That's who they are. That's who they have been. And that's who they're always going to be. The more things change, the more they stay exactly the same, and especially for the Nats on the big stage. And while Max Scherzer, one of the best pitchers of a generation, was getting knocked around, Milwaukee starter Brandon Woodruff was bringing the heat. He threw 38 fastballs. Every one of them hit 96.9 mph or faster. But then, in the bottom of the third, Washington shortstop Trey Turner caught up to one.
The 2-2 pitch to Turner is launched to left center field. This one is well hit. It's way back there. It may go, and it is gone! Into the Brewers' bullpen. Side corner, the Nationals are on the board. It's Trey Turner's first career postseason homer.
Good time for it, too. Nats Radio. So the Nationals were on the board, 3-1. But if we're being real, every single Nats fan knew how that was going to end. That home run was not going to mean anything other than they had been spared the humiliation of being shut out after getting shut down again with the entire world watching. All that was a sliver of false hope that would ultimately get extinguished. Fool's gold. They always do just enough to make it look close before they implode. And sure enough, the Nats go 1-2-3 in the fourth. They had a hit and an error in the fifth, 1-2-3 in the sixth, 1-2-3 in the seventh, six outs left, and then it would be over. The Nats would be put out of their misery again. The magical Brewers were six outs away from taking on the juggernaut that is the LA Dodgers. And they'd all done their job now, right? They'd all done their job. They got it to their hammer, Josh Hader. He came on in the bottom of the eighth. He struck out Victor Robles on a full count. Five more outs, and Nats fans would be out of their misery, and the rest of us could forget about them pretty much forever. But then something weird happened. Something really unusual. Something almost un-Nat-er-all, you might say. Hader, working really hard on pinch hitter Michael Taylor, getting to a 3-2 count, and then he hit him. The cardinal rule as a pitcher in tight postseason games is you never, ever give away free bags. Never give away free bases. You do that, and you'll pay the price. But still, it is the Nats. There's no way they take advantage. There's no way that comes back to haunt the Brewers. No chance. One on, one out. Hitter strikes out Turner. One on, two out, and probably none of this is going to matter. No need to worry about that hit batter because now they're four outs away and they've got their stud on the bump and he's going to finish. Ryan Zimmerman is the pinch hitter. He hits a broken bat blooper into center. I mean, the absolute definition of a sawed-off bat, but did just enough to get that ball to bleed and drop into center. Taylor goes to third. Now you've got runners on, two runners on. In the bottom of the eighth, Anthony Rendon coming up. Hitter's got to be careful with this guy, right? Well, he was too careful because he falls behind 3-0 and then he walks him. Once again, the last thing you want to do in the late innings of a postseason game is give away free bases. And now he's hit a batter, he's allowed a bloop single, and he's walked a batter. And he was working hard. This is not what Brewer fans were hoping for. You're asking for trouble because instead of choking out your choking opponent, you're giving him life. And sure enough, with the bases loaded, in the bottom of the eighth of a 3-1 game, Juan Soto comes to the plate. And on a 1-1 pitch, this happens.
Here it comes. Swing and a line drive. Base hit right field. Taylor scores from third. Stevenson around third. The ball missed in right field. Rounding third. Coming home is Rendon. He will score. But now caught in a rundown is Soto. He will be tagged out by Moustakas. But that's the third out. Three runs score on the play. A base hit to drive in two runs. An error on the right fielder, Grisham, allows the go-ahead run to score. And the Nationals are in front.
Brewers fans, say it with me. No! One run scores, two runs score, three runs score, 4-3 Nats. Milwaukee did catch Soto between bases to end that inning, but it didn't matter. Brass as hell. That's a 20-year-old who was 0-for-3 in the game with two strikeouts. Then in the bottom of the eighth, the biggest moment of the season, he comes through. I don't know how you do that at 20, but he did it. That moment was not too big for Soto. This guy felt right at home. That moment was so clutch and so un-Nats. It's amazing. Washington does not do that kind of thing ever. But they did it last night. Then Daniel Hudson comes in. He closes it out in the ninth. He gives up a single. And then this with two outs.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Center field. Uh-oh. Robles going back. Still back there. He makes the catch. He makes the catch. He makes the catch. And a wild card game winning. Curly W is in the books.
What I'm saying is for one split second, it looked like it had a chance. You imagine that? That would have rammed the ultimate dagger into Nats fans. You imagine if that had gone out, but it didn't. And for the first time ever, the Nats and Nats fans were advancing and partying like never before. It was impressive. It was clutch. I've got to tip my hat to them. And for the Brewers, what a brutal 10 minutes. You lead the entire game, you get to the eighth inning, you get it to your hammer, and then you implode. Man, I hate to do this. I hate to do this, and I've done this job a long, long time, and I'm really careful before I do this. I think long and hard before I use a word like this, but you have to call that what that is. That is a choke job. You cannot give up free bases. And Hader gave up two and paid a really painful price. From leading 3-1 and being minutes from advancing to falling behind 4-3 and going home. Everything was going according to plan. You want to be giving the ball to that guy with six outs to go and the lead. That was Craig Counsell's dream. But Hader couldn't hold it. And the only thing worse than him not having it last night was rookie outfielder Trent Grisham not having it either. He took a terrible line to that ball and completely missed it on the ground. His glove never came close to that ball, and it turned a nice single into a horrible nightmare. If he fields that ball cleanly, it's a tie game. He didn't, so it's a loss. And Brewers fans, man, I don't want to dump more salt into that wound, but the team that battled so hard to reach the postseason without Christian Yelich just got knocked out of the postseason on a ball that would have been hit to Christian Yelich. So Milwaukee goes home. Washington comes out here to do something they have never done, play postseason baseball after advancing. Because that was never supposed to happen. And for more than eight innings, it looked like it never would. Enjoy it while you can, Nats fan, because you're about to get put through the wood chipper with the Dodgers. But you did win a postseason game, even if the Brewers threw it away, and nobody can take that from you, I guess. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get that job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Joe Schobert is my guest. Joe, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the intro. Really pumps me up.
You got it, Joe. You earned it. All right, so you got that big game coming up on Monday. I know you're focused on that, but if you could, can you take me back to Sunday's game in Baltimore? Knowing everything that was riding on that game, how good did it feel to go out there and dominate the way you guys did and come away with a huge win in the division?
Yeah, obviously it felt great. I think going into the game, we felt the first couple of weeks of the season, we've been kind of inconsistent, and we knew if we put everything together, we'd be able to capable of winning a lot of football games. And I think last Sunday was the first step in that direction. All phases of the team, we played great. Defense, we were able to lock down their running game for the most part, keep Lamar in check, and get out of there with a big win.
Joe Schobert's my guest. You know, Joe, midway through the third quarter, you guys were up 17-10, but Baltimore is driving with a chance of possibly tying the game when you and Jermaine Whitehead forced a fumble, and then the offense went for a TD drive. Big swing, 24-10. How big was that swing at that time?
Yeah, I think that was huge. Our defensive staff said that was the player of the game in the film the next day, because obviously it kind of killed their momentum, and then we were able to score, get the points out of it and take the momentum back and didn't let it up for the rest of the game. So after that, they're forced to throw the ball a little bit more, and we were able to make some more plays and get some interceptions, and that really just kind of sealed the fate.
Yeah, speaking of the defensive staff and what you guys saw, what's it been like to play for Steve Wilks as defensive coordinator?
Yeah, it's obviously a lot different than what we experienced here the last couple of years. But he's a very, his scheme is very gap-centric. So everybody's got their one job. You have to do your 1/11th and rely on the guy next to you to do his. Don't try to be superhuman and do too many things, because then that ruins the integrity of the defense. And so he's very big on holding people accountable. He's very big on teaching players what their job is and how to do it at the best highest levels, and I think all the position coaches under him do a great job of understanding that as well and impressing that upon their position groups. And it's just a whole unit. You just do your 1/11th, everybody does their job, and it's going to be a very good scheme.
Yeah, I was going to say to you, I like the way you put that everybody's got to do their 1/11th, that it's gap-centric. Just do your 1/11th, and you should be fine. Now, Baltimore, though, they came back. They weren't done, and they had a drive of their own to make it 24-18. Then on the first play from scrimmage after that, Nick Chubb goes 88 yards for a TD. What was the mood like on the sideline when he breaks free and just sucks the air out of the entire stadium? What did that feel like?
Yeah, you could, like you said, to suck the air out of the entire stadium, you could tell just the fans. People, you could see people starting to turn and leave for the exits fourth quarter. You could just tell it was a big turning point. And then after that, once you got the next interception, people started leaving in masses. So it was just when you saw Chubb taking off, you know, I mean, guys on our team, we know how fast he is. Nobody was going to catch him. It's just a huge momentum boost for the whole team, and you kind of really sealed the game. It was kind of the dagger right there.
Joe Schobert joining us. And Joe, I know you're not going to make it about you, but for 1 second, make it about you, because you've had some huge games in your career, but have you ever had one as big as the one you had on Sunday, 17 tackles on the road against a divisional rival?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the most tackles, most involved I've been in a game so far in my career. It's funny how it just sometimes works out like that. Like going into the game wasn't like the way the schematics were, the game plan, everything. I didn't really think it was going to be that huge of a game. I knew I was going to be involved in plays, but never really expect to be involved in 17 tackles. So it was definitely unexpected, but, you know, happy to be able to produce and help the team win.
You know, Joe, on the other side of the ball, this seems to me, well, in fact, the entire locker room, there's a certain resiliency about this group and a certain mental toughness, especially on the offense. Like, you take Baker Mayfield. Back in August, you referenced the game last year against the Texans where he threw three INTs in the first half, but then he bounced back for roughly 300 yards in the second half. Most guys might go into a shell after the first half, especially a young guy, but he didn't. You didn't win that game, but what did that tell you about Baker Mayfield at that time?
Yeah, I think just like you said, that speaks to his attitude. He's a competitor to the last dying breath of a game. He's not going to give up just because you're down by a certain amount of points or he's done this. He threw a couple of interceptions earlier in the game. He's going to compete until the whistle blows and we're not allowed to compete anymore. That's just who he is, and I think that rubs off a lot on the offense and overall the whole team. Everybody just fighting to the last breath. There's a lot of camaraderie in the locker room and on the field, and I think Baker's a big part of that.
We're talking to Joe Schobert. Now, you made the point also that really good teams, really good playoff teams like the Patriots, are not going to go undefeated in September. That doesn't happen very often, but when November and December roll around, they are dominant. When you guys really get rolling on both sides of the ball, how good can this team be? What's the ceiling look like to you?
Yeah, I think you saw the first part of it this last weekend. If we play a complete football game, and there's still aspects that we could have improved upon on both sides of the ball, this last game, but if we play a complete football game, there's nobody in the league that we can't hang with. Even 2 weeks ago, we played the Rams, and there's things on both sides of the ball that we would obviously like to get better in, but we had the ball at the end of the game with a shot to tie or win the game, and it just didn't work out for us. So I think as the team gels and you keep playing and everybody gets more and more comfortable as the season goes along and everybody stays healthy, I think there's no telling how far this team can go.
Couple of things, Joe, before you go. You're a proud Badger. You're a former walk-on in Wisconsin. What do you make of how the Wisconsin football team has shown up so far this year?
Yeah, they're making me proud as a former Badger. I was a little nervous going into the Michigan game last week, but, you know, two weeks ago, they really stepped up and shut them out. They could have beat them 50-0 if they wanted to, if they didn't pull their starters in the third quarter. So they definitely bounced back from a little bit more of a rough year last year than we've had in the past couple. I'm looking forward to seeing how far they go this year.
Yeah, Joe, I made the point on this show. We just sent our oldest son to Wisconsin. He just started as a freshman there, so I like to talk to former athletes and people that went there. When you look back on your time at Wisconsin, what kind of thoughts and memories do you have? What was that time like?
Yeah, it was a blast. Obviously, college is a college. There's a lot of fun to be had all over the place. I just remember hanging out with all my teammates and going to somebody's house, having a cookout. We had a bunch of guys lived on the same street, so there's cookouts and things like that all the time, going working out early in the morning, and then going to class when everybody else, all the students wake up bleary-eyed and at their 8:30 classes, and we've already put in 3 hours of work, and you're just looking across like, come on, guys, you haven't done anything this morning yet. We're working hard. We should be tired.
I like it.
A lot of good stuff like that, a lot of great places to eat, the lakes. Madison's got a great location, so it was a lot of fun.
In fact, he's in one of those dorms right by that lake. It looks great. Joe, before you go, I know you and your wife, Megan, have an ongoing relationship with University Hospital's Cancer Center. You spend time with the patients there. You spend time with the team. You do so on your own. Why is that something that's so important to you and your wife?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it really starts with Wisconsin at Badgers Give Back. Back in the day, we used to go to the Children's Hospital every week and go visit patients. And when you're a college-age kid, especially in my situation, I didn't really have any friends or anybody who experienced any life-threatening illnesses or diseases. And then that really opens your eyes to the people in this world who struggle a lot more than you do, and they deserve a lot more attention than you probably feel you should get as being an athlete, and just their situation and what they've gone through. And that's just something, as we came to Cleveland, the Browns Give 10 organizations, our charity organization, my rookie year, I think the first time Halloween came around, all the rookies dressed up and went over to the Rainbows and Babies, the UH Hospital, to kind of brighten the kids' days. And ever since then, I've just been going back because it's just something that through your eyes, you can make those kids' days so much better. And people who are struggling with cancer and stuff like that, you can make their day so much better just by showing up and talking for a couple of minutes. And they're the people in this world who really need the pick-me-ups. So that's why me and the wife like to go.
Good for you, Joe. I would finally say that it's so gut-wrenching and it's so heartbreaking, but I would imagine when you go into those wards and you see those kids, have you ever seen such courage in your life?
No, definitely. It's a real gut check when you see kids, and especially their family members and their parents. You can see how proud their parents are of the kids, just the stuff they've gone through and how brave they are on a daily basis. And they're fighting for their lives day in and day out, and we're just playing a game of football, and we can make their day that much better. It's a big impact. It has a big impact on us, and I know it has a big impact on the kids, too.
Browns coming off a huge win. They're at San Francisco on Monday night. Their Pro Bowl linebacker, Joe Schobert, is my guest. Joe, great to have you on the show. Really appreciate that visit, Joe. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
If you're the person who's doing the hiring, you know it can be a really slow process, right? Cafe Alturas, COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but was having trouble finding the right candidates. So Dylan switched up and went to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. So that way you get qualified candidates and you get them fast. Take Dylan. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said that he was really impressed with how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. This is how Dylan got it done. He found his new director of coffee in only a few days, and that's not unusual. It's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. So see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address. Write this down, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. All right, so I mentioned Florida Man and how fascinating Florida Man is. It's a concept, right? A fascinating concept that's taken on a life of its own. You hear those two words, Florida Man, and you know somebody went imbecile. Probably a story that's going to involve beer or swords or wildlife or all the above, right? Florida Man, what do you think when you hear that? Well, in this case, it does involve beer and dolphins. The Miami Dolphins. So Sunday, Florida Man. In fact, there's a specific Florida Man, not just a concept. Florida Man Nathan Collier, a beer vendor at the Dolphins game, was arrested after charging a fan $724 for a couple of beers. 724 bones for 2 beers. Is this Hard Rock Stadium or a Hard Rock Hotel pool party in Vegas? Hell! Did my dude just order a couple of plastic cups of suds or bottle service to his plastic teal seat at a Dolphins Chargers game in week 4? Craft Beer Guy is gripping right now to fire off some super inside tweet. Then maybe the bro at the game rang up 2 pours of Carlsberg Jacobsen. Or maybe he bought his entire section a case of Pliny the Elder. Why don't you sit this one out, craft beer guy? You and I and everyone who's ever been to a game know that stadiums and arenas are incapable of getting more creative or risky than Goose Island IPA. There is no $400 bottle of Jacobsen in any concession stand anywhere. And one more thing about this. Scamming the less fortunate or the oppressed is dirty freaking pool. It's foul play. And how much more oppressed or less fortunate could anybody be than a Dolphins fan? It's like coaxing a Social Security number out of a poor elderly person who answered your scam phone call. Or price gouging disaster relief items after a tornado. There is a warm place in hell for hucksters who stick it to people who are already getting it stuck to them. Speaking of hell, working a beer scam at a Dolphins game in the middle of an all-time tank job is like cruising by the thermostat in hell and secretly bumping it up a few degrees. It's hell. It's hot enough. Or in this case, it's a freaking Dolphins game. It sucks enough. It's terrible enough without you conning 7 bills on the necessary medicinal lubricant. You see me working here. Notice that Robin Hood did not make his name stealing from the poor. Now, the genius of this scam, if there was any genius in this scam, is the fact that everybody knows stadium food is really expensive. You expect to get jammed when you go to the stadium and you buy food or drink. And the only thing more expensive than stadium food is stadium beer, which is why this scam may have actually worked. it could have had a chance of working if it was done correctly. But according to the Miami Herald, the so-called rogue beer vendor, as they referred to him, took a credit card from a customer, swiped it on his own personal card reader, not the one issued by the stadium, and did in fact try to charge that customer. No, did charge that customer $724 for a couple of beers. Man, that is a strong move. Strongly idiotic. Two beers that reportedly should go for around $20. And this guy tries to charge $724. So my only question then is, why stop at $724? Why not go for $5,000 or $10,000? The reported retail price is $10 a beer. Collier charged a nice, fat $362 a beer. Like you're thinking about hitting a single. My man, Nate Collier, was looking for an 8-run home run. Like, how did that guy see that going? That the customer would get the statement at the end of the month and think, $724 for a couple of beers at the Dolphins game. Man, I guess beer prices really have gone up. And just keep rolling like it was nothing? But that's not what happened. You see, that customer didn't have to wait till the end of the month. It was so egregious, and the charge was so high, the customer got the immediate alert from the bank. The alert went to the phone. It had the name of the vendor on it. The customer alerted authorities. Collier was fitted for silver bracelets. Arrested, charged with grand theft. And by the way, that's what that is, right? $724 for two beers, grand theft. And charged for using a skimming device. And he got fired. Now back to the original idea. There is a way that scam could actually work. I'm not in the business of giving out advice on how to rob people. But the good thing here is that Florida man, Nathan Collier, got really greedy. Man, all this guy had to do was charge an extra $5 or $10. Maybe $15 even per beer. Nobody would have noticed. You ding enough people an extra $10 or $20, it might actually be worth your time and you might get away with it. Except not this dude. Not Nate. Nate went smash and grab. He went for the home run. Instead of casing the bank, figuring out the weak spots in the security system, and going full stealth mode and make sure he got away, my man grabbed a dump truck, drove right through the wall, and then tried to drive off. This guy came into this scam swinging out his ass. Like, you want to charge $5 or $10 extra? Man, that is so weak. Charge $350 extra. Man's game. There's the money play. The real money's not in a few bucks here or there. It's in charging 35 times what that beer actually retails for. In other words, Nathan Collier went Sean Parker from The Social Network. $1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion. And my man went all Florida man to get that $1 billion in one beer transaction. Nothing but respect, Nate. Well, respect and handcuffs. Last thought. I got a quick memo to all 43 Miami Dolphin fans in the Miami-Dade area. Next time you get the crazy idea that you want to go to a Dolphins game, instead, drop an anchor in the parking lot and watch the mobile strippers from Scarlett's Gentlemen's Club instead. Yes, it is a real thing. Yes, the Dolphins tailgaters have featured real strippers in the back of a pickup truck or trucks since week one. And yes, the beer in the parking lot costs a lot less than $724. And on top of all of that, you do not have to watch the Dolphins. Win, win, win.
Win, win, win.
He is a friend of the program. He is Michael McCann. Michael, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you, Michael. Now, normally when you and I speak, it's because a crime has been committed or somebody's being sued for something pretty terrible. So I want to take this opportunity to bring you on to talk about something which I think is pretty exciting, California's Fair Pay-to-Play Act. Before we get into the details of what it is and the impact, what was your first reaction when the act was signed into law? How significant a moment is this?
It's a really significant moment, Jim, because it's a game changer in the sense that California is doing something that no other state has done. And it did it in a bipartisan way as well, which I think is important because this isn't a law. We know a lot of laws are Democratic or Republican. This had bipartisan support. So that's a sign that there are folks, probably certainly in California, but probably in other states, that think that college athletes should be able to get paid for the use of their name, image, and likeness. That this isn't about whether colleges pay them. This is separate. This is if they're on apparel, if they're in a video game, stuff like that, that they should get something.
Okay, I'm going to go back to that point in a moment that you just made. Let me ask you this. You've got a piece up on SI.com with Ed O'Bannon. Ed was there with Gavin Newsom when the act was signed. From the work that you've done with him over the years, what has this journey been like for Ed?
It's been a long journey. It's a journey that began, as you know, when he had retired from the NBA and playing pro basketball. A buddy of his told him, hey, Ed, my kid bought this video game and you're in it. And that sparked what became a 7-year case against the NCAA, a case that he knew from the beginning he wouldn't get paid anything. You know, people think, oh, he did it for the money. The only remedy that he would have got was something that doesn't benefit him, which is that going forward, players would have the right to negotiate a change of rules. So it was a long battle, and he ultimately won. Now, on appeal, the Ninth Circuit, the Federal Appeals Court, reduced in a way the remedy, but this California law takes the O'Bannon victory and turns it into action.
Michael McCann is joining us. All right, so Michael, in terms of the act itself, which makes it illegal in California for schools to deny their athletes opportunities to be compensated for their names, images, and likenesses, break that down for me. Exactly what does that mean?
It means, Jim, if you're a college athlete and a video game wants to have you in it, or if a car dealership wants to have you sponsor it or endorse it, or a summer camp wants to have you your name there, you have a right under this law to get paid for it, even though NCAA rules say you can't. The act tells California colleges you cannot take away their eligibility to play sports if they sign a contract for that purpose. Again, for the use of their name, image, and likeness. So it puts California colleges in a position where they have to violate NCAA rules. So they either have to follow California law or the NCAA. They're going to follow the law because that's, you know, it's a lot more meaningful following the law than just internal rules. But that's the gist of it. So college athletes, whether they're big-time basketball players or football players or Olympic athletes who are in college, I mean, there are all sorts of people that their peak earning years for their identity is while they're in college. So this gives them a right to get paid for it when it goes into effect, which is 2023.
Michael McCann is joining us. All right, so a lot to unpack right there. But to that point that it puts them at odds with the NCAA, could you see then a scenario in which the California schools or even the entire Pac-12 leaves the NCAA?
I think it's unlikely at this time, but the short answer is yes, because the California colleges or the Pac-12, as you mentioned, they could get together to say, do we really need the NCAA? Because if we know California is obviously, it's got the fifth biggest economy in the world. It could be a country in its own right. It has the kind of economic wherewithal that it could have its own college league. And if that were extended to include other schools in the Pac-12, that could be a pretty formidable league for college sports. And then they may say, well, we can do our own TV deals without the NCAA. We could create our own rules for compliance without the NCAA. Why not? And now, obviously, there's a lot there, right? There's transition costs. There's risk. A lot of college administrators don't like risk. So that population of people may not embrace that type of sort of radical idea. But you'd think that some of them may think, play it out and think in their heads, hey, why do we need the NCAA?
We're talking to Michael McCann. So finish that thought, Michael. For instance, as you point out, they would not be in breach of the law, of course, but they'd be in breach of NCAA regulations. So how would that play out, and how do you think the NCAA has dealt with this so far, and how do you think they'll handle it?
Yeah, so a few things there. One is that the NCAA has already said that these schools are not going to be able to play in national games once this law goes into effect, because these athletes in the NCAA's view won't will no longer be student athletes because they'll be compensated in a way that the NCAA prohibits. The NCAA could also kick out these colleges. They could say, you're no longer adhering to your contractual obligation, you're in breach, you can no longer be an NCAA member. But I think a couple things will happen before all that happens. One is that the NCAA put together a working group to study this very topic. That happened in May. That working group consists of sort of institutional players, Gene Smith at Ohio State, Jack DeJoy, the president of Georgetown. So people that are probably kind of, I don't want to say conventional in a negative way, but they're not sort of likely to propose dramatic changes based on their background. But they're going to propose something this month to the NCAA, so we'll see what that is. And then the other big part of it is a lawsuit, where the NCAA actually has a pretty good legal argument to say it's unconstitutional for California to change the rules for other states. Because if California makes it impossible for the NCAA to enforce its rules there, that can have an effect on interstate commerce. And very generally, interstate commerce is something that the federal government decides under the Constitution. States can get in trouble when they try to regulate it. There's also a previous case related to this, 1993, a case involving Nevada changed its laws in the wake of the UNLV basketball scandal. The court held you can't do that. And we could see something like that here, potentially.
We're talking to legal analyst Michael McCann. He's breaking this all down for us. Michael, back to a point that you made at the very top. The compensation itself, where does it come from? Is it coming from the schools itself or from outside entities that might hire athletes to endorse products and services?
Yeah, outside entities. So video game EA, for instance. EA decides to do a video game with college athletes. Maybe they don't get the NCAA's license, but they have schools based in Los Angeles and Palo Alto and whatever, just have a game with these players' real identities. So the players would be paid by, in that situation, Electronic Arts. Or maybe they do a deal with Adidas or Nike or New Balance or some company like that, and they get paid to endorse a shoe. Or I think more likely to happen is smaller stuff, which is summer camps and things like that, where athletes go home. Maybe their name could be used to promote a camp, and then they coach there, things like that, or apparel companies. So it would be outside companies paying.
All right, so you mentioned the shoe companies. What if a shoe company, for instance, wants to do something with an individual player, but that school already has a contract with a different shoe company? How would that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the California foresaw that, and they included a clause which says basically if USC or UCLA has a deal with Nike, the student can't do a deal with Adidas or a rival company. Whatever deal the student does has to be compatible with the school's existing deals. So they foresaw that as a potential issue and tried to address it.
We're talking to Michael McCann for a few more moments. Michael, so what do you think this looks like? What kind of financial gains do you expect to see for athletes starting in 2023?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make a fortune out of this, but I do think they'll get something. And in a way, that's really maybe the most important thing. I mean, there are some college athletes that will potentially make a lot of money through this. But I think most of them just want to get something, whether it's a video game or whether they can sponsor a camp, just some kind of benefit. And maybe it's not a dramatic thing, but what it could do is a couple things. It could actually, and Ed O'Bannon wrote this in a Sports Illustrated piece, he said some of these students may be more inclined to do their work and do studies, because if they're getting an endorsement deal that's contingent upon them being in good academic standing, maybe they'll work harder in school, or maybe they're more likely to stay in school and graduate rather than leave. I mean, there are all sorts of possibilities here that could be, maybe aren't intentional, but could be good things.
Michael, before I let you go, in the interest of balance, if you look at the other side of this, there have been a number of criticisms of the act, including the argument that college athletes, of course, are already being compensated in the form of an education. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Yeah, that's true. They are being compensated in the form of education, but this, a couple things. One is that this doesn't require schools to pay them anything. So they're not getting some new source of money from their schools. This is like we talked about, it's outside entities paying. And then secondly, college sports is professional for everyone except the players. The coaches can enter a marketplace, and Nick Saban can get more than $10 million a year. Assistant coaches can make a ton of money. The trainers, they play in athletic facilities, arenas, stadiums that are pro quality. I mean, everything about college sports, including TV deals, is professional. So why do we carve out the athletes from that? And I think that's the response to that, is to say maybe that's not fair. And then secondly, this doesn't change things that much. It really is about outside relationships that they may do anyway, and this would make them happen over the table.
All right, so does it change this, before you go, like this suggestion that it's going to make college sports unfair because it's going to make the playing field unlevel because certain schools and alumni will have more resources to pay players? Is there anything to that?
I mean, it's already true, right? Like, there's already an elite group of colleges for sports. There are smaller colleges that have no way of competing with them. So the notion that there's competitive balance already in college sports, I think, is just not true. And maybe this doesn't help that. I don't know. But what this does do is maybe college athletes that aren't going to play for championship schools, this will allow them to get more recognition, more of an identity than they currently have. So, and also, even if a school has more money, it doesn't affect this because it's the outside groups that would be paying.
Clones, if you're like me, you're always looking for a better, faster, cleaner source of natural energy and nutrition. Good news, I have found it. I'm talking about Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is the obsessively researched, all-in-one nutritional support powder containing 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food ingredients. Just one scoop contains essential prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, and more, all of which support your gut health, energy levels, and immune system. And it's easy. Every morning before breakfast, I mix a scoop into 10 ounces of water, and I get a jump start on feeling my best for the entire day. On the road or away from home, the travel packs make it especially simple to keep up your healthy routine because there is no need to carry around multiple pill bottles. Simply put, Athletic Greens can help you feel amazing every day no matter what life throws your way. So start every day by squaring away your nutritional needs so you're ready for whatever comes your way. And right now you can jump over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer today, 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Athletic Greens, start your day right. Good things will follow. All right, so Tennessee fans, you don't need me to tell you that when your football team gets mentioned on this show these days, it's never for a good reason. The only good run that your football team has gotten here lately is when I took you down that trip down memory lane with the Kiff Lane. Now, that was awesome. What's happening right now, not so much. And believe me, you know me. I would like nothing more than to be positive and upbeat and to lift everybody up. I'm a glass half full guy. You know this about me. I would love to be hyping your team right now. But as you know, that's hard. Really hard. In fact, impossible. Jeremy Pruitt took over last year. Promptly got kicked in the teeth. 40-14 in the season opener against West Virginia. No worries. That'll happen. Then they get back on track with a pair of cupcake wins. But then that was followed by getting wrecked by Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. And then they had that weird win over Auburn, rammed in the middle. Then a close loss to South Carolina, wins over Charlotte and Kentucky. Then they got smashed up by Missouri and Vanderbilt. You finish the year at 5-7. A rough start, but things have to get better in year two. Bound to get better in year two. Except they haven't. They opened up this year by losing to Georgia State at home, then to BYU. Then they bounce back and they beat Chattanooga. Then they get trucked by Florida, 34-3. Remember when that used to be an actual rivalry? So 16 games in to Jeremy Pruitt's time, he's 6-10 with 7 losses by at least 25 points. And they've got number 3 Georgia on Saturday. So you may as well just pencil in 8 losses by at least 25 points. Or better yet, 7 by at least 25 points and 1 by 40. It's a lot of L's on the record. And that's not all. They're also taking L's on the police report. News broke yesterday involving the arrest of Vols linebacker Jeremy Banks. And let's just say that Banks and Pruitt handled their business about as well off the field as they do on it, which is to suggest not well at all. According to reports, Banks was pulled over on September 15th after making a U-turn. University of Tennessee police discovered that he did not have a driver's license because it had been suspended and there was a warrant out for failing to appear in court. Now, all in all, pretty stupid. Now, I'll own this. When I was in college, I did some pretty stupid things. Maybe not that stupid, but stupid. But that's really stupid. I mean, like, you shouldn't let your license expire, and you really should not miss a court date. Forgetting to call into a radio program if you're going to do an interview is one thing. Forgetting to show up in court is another. But it's not the end of the world. It's not, except it only got worse. Because Banks was arrested at that point and then told a woman who was participating in a ride-along in the back seat the following.
Ma'am, I don't think you want to be an intern, because where I'm from, we shoot at cops. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
Ma'am, you don't want to be an intern, because where I'm from, we shoot at cops. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah, I don't know, Mr. Banks. That's not okay. That's not cool. And then he went on and he said this.
Police is lame, ma'am. I don't think you want to be a police. You remember what I told you, though.
Quote, police is lame, ma'am. I don't think you want to be a police. You remember what I told you. Man, that's something. The guy who just got arrested for pulling a U-turn and driving without a license, giving life advice to somebody else. And really bad advice at that. But that's not the only troubling part from a Tennessee perspective, because then the coach got involved. You've got Jeremy Banks, who calls Jeremy Pruitt, and Pruitt had some kind of weird things to say himself. Now, in fairness, Pruitt sounded pretty tired when the police called, but I'm not sure that fully explains Pruitt saying that he thought that Banks had paid the ticket, and then this beauty.
So why do you have to arrest him just because he's got a warrant?
He just said, quote, why do you have to arrest him just because he has a warrant? Yeah, coach, that's kind of how that works. It's an arrest warrant. An arrest warrant leads to an actual arrest. That's how that goes. An arrest warrant means there is a legal obligation to arrest the subject of the warrant. That's the way the judicial system works. It's kind of the way life works. Quote, why did you have to arrest him? Just because he has a warrant. Man, that's an all-time combination of questions. I mean, I can't even figure out where the guy was going with that. Does he not understand what a warrant is? Does he not understand what a warrant means? He then summed up the situation like this. He just said, quote, this is the silliest bleep I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, I've got it. I understand. I've worked at 4 places, and I ain't never had no crap like this, except for here. Hey, listen, if you want to say that it's really silly that a U-turn escalated into something like this, I mean, I guess we could have that discussion. I'm going to win that discussion, but I think we can have that discussion. But then, as I understand it, and maybe it's just me, the issue is not the U-turn. It's the driving without a license and the failure to show up for court. Oh, and the warrant. And how about Pruitt going with, I've worked at 4 places, and I ain't never had no crap like this, except for here. Look, I'm not going to be naive and say that big-time football programs do not get some favorable treatment in certain places, but I don't think you want to go around hyping that and banging that drum. That shouldn't be some sort of flex that you pull to get your guy out of a bad situation. Now, coaches talk about how you don't want to put bad plays on tape. You always hear that. You don't want bad plays on tape. You know what you don't want? Bad takes on tape. And that's a really bad take, an all-time bad take. That's going to stick to you, especially when you're running teams out there that are routinely losing by 25 and probably 40 this weekend. You're coaching and playing football at Tennessee. Man, that does not make you above the law. Even if you think so. Head coach is always talking about molding young men and future leaders. And here you've got a head coach seeming to suggest to the police that they ought to look the other way. That's pretty classy. I'm not sure what's worse. How Pruitt is handling his business on the field or how he handled it off the field. And then he dropped this gem on the officer.
Go ahead and do your civic duty, man.
All right, appreciate it, coach. Sorry. Thanks.
He coached him. Go ahead, do your civic duty, man. That is an amazing line. I mean, you want to talk arrogance? Go ahead and do your civic duty, man. Again, I don't know what I like better. Banks telling an officer, you don't want to be a police? Or Pruitt telling an officer, go ahead, do your civic duty, man.
Go ahead, do your civic duty, man.
Tie for last. Do your civic duty, man. Go ahead. Arrest that player who there's a warrant for. In the good old days, volunteer football was all about, it's Tennessee. That's the way it is sometimes. Now, it's all about, go ahead, do your civic duty, man.
Go ahead.
Tennessee football, losing on the field and losing off it. Embarrassing on the field and off it. It is NFL season. Are you looking to get down? Are you looking to get a little bit of action? If so, you want to go to MyBookie. Here's why. It's fast. It's easy. And they pay when you win. Let's face it. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And I would not be sending you guys there if they were not the absolute best. Do the smart thing. If you are going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. There are a number of reasons why you might do so. Say, for instance, you make a bet and it's not going well. You can still bet once the game is underway. If the second half, it looks like your bet's going to lose, you can always take the other side. Or maybe you're somebody who likes to bet a little bit and try to win a lot, then try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings, and that's how that parlay works. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. So join right now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code Rome, activate the offer. That's a great, great offer. Promo code Rome, activate right now. Go to mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Sean, of course, is Sean Casey. Sean, welcome back. Good to have you. How are you?
Romy, what's up, man? How you doing, brother?
Good, Case. How about you? How are things?
Oh, things are great, man. I got no complaints. It's baseball season. October's here, so it's good for everybody if you're a baseball fan.
Not just baseball season, but postseason baseball. So when you think of the history, Sean, let me start you with the Nationals. When you think of the history they have in the postseason, what were you thinking when they fell behind 2-0 in the first and 3-0 in the second last night?
Oh, man, when Grandal, you know, hit that two-run bomb in the first, I was thinking, here they go again. They just can't get it. You know, the Nationals have, they can't get things going in the postseason for whatever reason. But you know, this club has felt different all year long. When you know, when they went down 3-0 and Thames hit that ball, or Thames hit the ball, and then Turner, you know, kind of put him up, put it into the, when he made it 3-1, Turner, and came into the dugout and they were all jumping up and down. I was like, man, you don't usually see that in the Nationals. They usually feel like a stiff team. And then when Soto got that big hit in the eighth, you know, got Hader in trouble, you know, with the bases loaded, man, and they celebrated. It was just, it was really cool to see.
Sean Casey joining us. All right, so let's skip ahead. What about Soto? He singles to right. It's misplayed in the outfield. And then 3-run score. The Nationals go on to win. What's it say about Soto that he's 20 years old and he came through in such a huge moment like that?
Well, you know, it's unbelievable when you hear him talk after the game. You know, talks like a veteran, how he was saying, hey, I knew Hader was in trouble. You know, as a hitter, when you get a guy bases loaded, he's walked a couple guys. He got the flare hit from Zimmerman. You know, you know Hader's got a good heater. When Soto was saying, man, I knew I had him. I knew he was in trouble because I was going to hunt the fastball and I was going to stay on the slider away. He said he was trying to just hit a single up the middle, like such a veteran mentality. And then when Hader threw, what it was that, 96, 97, up in the zone, and Soto turned on it to right, man. It was just a veteran mindset, and I think that's why this kid's going to be so special, is because, you know, he thinks differently than guys that have been in the league 10 years.
And again, he's just 20. Sean Casey joining us. So, Sean, the Brewers were so impressive down the stretch. They get to the postseason without Christian Yelich, but how hard will it be to get over a game like that last night? I mean, how painful is it to go from leading the entire game and being four outs away to suddenly having your season end abruptly like that?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one, you know, especially when they lost Yelich and then started playing unbelievable ball since then. You know, one of the best teams in baseball down the stretch. And, listen, listening to the council talk after the game, you know, obviously the manager of the Brewers, he was saying that, you know, it set up perfectly. He had Pomeranz, you know, he had Woodruff and then Suter and then Pomeranz for two, and then he had Hader for two, and that was the role. You know, people said, why don't you keep Pomeranz in? But, you know, Hader set up perfectly there for 8-9. He's been lights out for the last few weeks. And, you know, I think if you ask Council again, would he do the same thing? I think he would. And obviously, I think, you know, Rendon had a great at bat in that walk before Soto to set up there. And, you know, it is a tough loss, man. Anytime you watch when you're up 3-1 in the eighth inning and you watch other teams celebrate, you know, that's definitely a punch in the gut. But, you know, I just really think that team's good. They're built for the long haul. They'll be back again next year. And Craig Council is a great manager.
Sean Casey joining us. I agree with you. Craig Council is a great manager.
Yeah.
So what about the Nationals, Sean? How do you like their chances against LA in the next round?
You know what? They were the one team I think LA didn't want to see. You know, I just think with that rotation, you know, with Strasburg, you know, with Scherzer, with Corbin, and you know, obviously you saw what Hudson last night. You just had that great stuff at the back end. Doolittle. I think the bullpen has always been a little iffy, but I still think they have good enough arms. The Dodgers are going to be good, man. I mean, this is probably the best team they've had in the last few years with 106 wins and that rotation, that lineup, all that stuff. So it's going to be a battle, man. It's going to be a great division series, and I'm glad the Nationals won because I think they match up well with the Dodgers.
Sean Casey joining us. Now, I know you like L.A., but you like Atlanta better in a matchup, right? A potential matchup with the Dodgers. What do you like about the Braves?
Man, Atlanta is good, man. They are good. That young pitching's really good. The bullpen's good. That, you know, everybody from Freeman and Acuna is like maybe the next Mike Trout of the game, maybe the best player in the game. Freeman in the middle there, just top to bottom, Donaldson, you know, they match up really well with the Dodgers. So if the Dodgers can get by the Nationals and Atlanta can get by the Cardinals, because the Cardinals are good too, that'll be an unbelievable championship series if it turns out to be Atlanta and L.A.
Sean Casey joining us. Case, A's and Rays in the AL wildcard game tonight. Who do you like?
First off, I love it. I love how I always feel like every year, Romy, we look at the A's and go, they're going to be okay. And bam, you know, Bob Melvin finds a way to just win, you know, 90-plus games. So, you know, that's pretty amazing. I think the pitching matchup's going to be great. I mean, Charlie Morton's been great all year. Manaea's been really good in these last 5-6 starts, you know, really lights out, just over one ERA. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, and I think the Rays find a way to win this game and move on to the division series.
I like that matchup a lot. It's going to be a really important one. Sean Casey joining us, and then of course you got the Twins and Yankees starting on Friday night. I mean, there's no denying the talent, Sean, on the Yankees roster, but what about Minnesota? We know they can really swing it. Are people sleeping on them though, top to bottom?
Yeah, I do. I think so. You know, I was picking my bracket the other day, and I picked the Twins to beat the Yankees in this round just because I think we are sleeping on them. I think the pitching's a lot better than people know about. I think that lineup, you know, never stopped hitting from day one. You know, they just kept hitting home runs. There's danger in that lineup all the way up and down. Bullpen's been good, you know. So I think, you know, obviously the Yankees are tough. I just worry about their starting pitching. I feel like Aaron Boone's going to have to really almost did what Craig Council did, really match up. You know, you have to see what Paxton can do and Tanaka. What can they give you depth? Because you're really going to have to match up that bullpen. Because I think that lineup for the Twins is going to, you know, not let those starters go too deep.
Covering a lot of ground with Sean Casey. Sean, what about the Astros? Like, when you look at the regular season and you look at the year they had, it was so impressive. And then sometimes when you have a nice regular season like that, guys might get a little bit comfortable in the postseason. But when you look at the makeup of that clubhouse and you see guys like Justin Verlander, Alex Bregman, the way these guys attack the game, do you sense any complacency in them at all?
Roman, you nailed it, man. These guys are killers, I think. Like there's no let up with the Astros. They're coming for you. They come for you all night long. They did it every game this season. You know, I think if you got a guy like Alex Bregman on your team, just I think the atmosphere he sets in that clubhouse is like, you know, let's go, guys. Let's get after these guys night in and night out. You know, and you got, when you're talking Verlander, Cole, and you're talking Greinke's your number three, I mean, come on. That's deep. And Wade Miley had a nice year too, but you know, that lineup top to bottom, is just impressive. And you know, whoever plays the Astros, whether it's the Rays or the A's, you know, they're in for a handful, because you know, that team's coming for you.
Sean, legendary Reds announcer Marty Brenneman called his final game last week. What kind of memories do you have of him?
God, Marty's just a legend. You know, if you're a Cincinnati Reds fan, and you know, obviously going back to the Big Red Machine when, you know, he and Nuxie and all the great Al Michaels and the guys that called those games. I mean, Marty's you know, obviously a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and you know, for me, man, he was just such a great guy to me. You know, Marty called it like he saw it. You know what I mean? I think sometimes he ruffled some of the players wrong at times, but you know what? He was honest. And, you know, when the teams were bad, he let you know. And when the teams were good, he was the first one to praise you. So, you know, it's going to be so weird listening to Reds games without Marty Brenneman being up there in the booth.
No doubt. Sean Casey joining us. Case, before you go, the Sean Casey Golf Classic to benefit the Miracle League of the South Hills is going to take place on Friday. How much are you looking forward to that, and how do people find out more info?
Romy, you're the best. Yeah, we got a little golf outing on Friday. You can go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org and check it out. And for us, our Miracle League is going on now. If anyone out there wants to donate, you can go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org and do that. Or if you're around the area, Pittsburgh area, you can come volunteer for us. We're always looking for volunteers. And my golf game is one of the worst in the country, Romy, so I'll just probably be slinging it all over at this Sean Casey Golf Classic. No chance I don't shoot under 120.
I love that. But even worse than your golf game, though, Case, how about when you were on the mound a couple of weeks back in the Miracle League at South Hills? You got knocked around pretty good now, Sean. You allowed 40 runs without recording an out. It was great. What are those games like for you, and how much fun was it to give up that many hits?
Dude, that's next-level research, Romy. That is next-level research. I tell you what, I love it, man. When you give up those hits to those kids, it's the best feeling ever. I tell you what, it's a stressful job, Romy, because if you're not throwing the pitches right where they want them, they'll let you know. So I'm always wheeling and dealing, trying to find a way to, you know, hit their barrel as quick as I can. But that's the best 40 runs I've ever given up.
I love it. The MLB Network is going to exclusively air Game 1 of the Twins and Yankees Friday, 7 p.m. Monday's Game 3 between the Astros and tonight's AL wildcard winner also. And make sure you check that out. You can watch Sean Casey on MLB Tonight throughout the postseason. Case, had to start the postseason off by running you down. I appreciate it, Sean. Thanks so much.
Anytime, Romy. Great talking to you, my man. I'll talk
you
to you
too,
soon.
Sean. Lawrence, welcome back. What's going on?
I am standing in the rain in cold Michigan outside of work, Rome. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome, Lawrence. So what's on your mind?
I'm going to point the sword towards East Lansing and do some damage in Spartan Stadium.
Do what you do, Lawrence.
Okay. Dan Antonio, oh, my God. You disgust me. You are a standing corpse, sir. If I played football for you, I would just laugh at you and just listen to my quarterback coach if I was Brian Lewerke. Holy smokes. You are a terrifying sight to see. Shameful.
All right, so now point your sword at somebody else.
Point my sword at somebody else.
That's not a good call. No.
You, sir.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Are shameful.
Not a very good call.
You, sir, reek of failure. Lawrence. Gotta be ready to roll, Lawrence. You ran out of takes after one. Come on, Lawrence. Hey, man, you're playing on a big stage, Larry. You got to be ready to roll. I thought you wanted to go in on Mike D. All right, anyway, I don't know what he wanted. He wanted more. He got a taste, man. People get drunk on it, don't they? People get drunk on it. They come in the jungle. They get some run. The JTP is talking about him, not positively. But then they just get drunk on it, and they want more. It gets in the bloodstream, and you've never had that before, right? You're like, damn, what is that? That feels amazing. That feels euphoric. They're talking about me on the show. They're talking about me on Twitter. Never mind that nobody's saying anything positive, but you can't wait to run that back again, right? You want that feeling again. Man, when that hits your bloodstream, you've never felt anything like that again. So you get back in line. Shoot me up again, Rome. Shoot me up with some of that jungle euphoria. Give me that jungle drug, Rome. You can't just show up. Like, I'm not your pusher. If you want to participate, have a take, don't suck. Elevate the conversation. Make this show better. Make the entire jungle establishment better.
Shameful.
You got to bring something to it now. All right, so Lawrence and Michigan try to go back-to-back, try to run that back, and that did not go well. Yesterday was at least kind of weird and odd. Weird being good. Today was just bad.
Good night!